The Aspire podcast series has been developed by Sheffield Hallam University Aspire Scholars as a resource to support students on their career development journey. The Aspire programme is dedicated to eradicating structural racism in higher education, working collaboratively with institutions to implement policy changes that promote diversity and combat bias. By amplifying the voice of Black scholars, the programme aims to enrich the academic community with diverse perspectives and, in doing so, strengthen the foundation of knowledge for generations to come. Aspire is more than a programme, it is a catalyst for change, a path to excellence and a promise of a more inclusive tomorrow.
Good morning and welcome to a new episode of the Aspire podcast. Today I'm joined by Abby Mason. Welcome, Abby.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning. I'm delighted to be here today.
So, Abby, thanks for joining us today. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay, well, this could be a long answer because I've spent 20 years working within recruitment, so I'll try and summarise as best as I can for you. I was born in West Africa, so I'm from Ghana, and my family came to the UK when I was two. So I went through education, pretty mainstream. I started out actually wanting to be a West End performer. So I went and studied drama with English at the University of Manchester. So something a little bit academic, but also leaning towards my performance passion. And after a few less than successful auditions, where I was decidedly average, I ended up moving away from performance and just falling into a world of recruitment. And since then, I've progressed over the years from trainee to account manager to head of global recruitment, to running my own employability business, through to where I am today, which is senior talent acquisition manager in the biggest beauty company in the world. So day to day, I recruit talent into the business, into commercial strategy and e-commerce roles at L'Oreal. And I also drive the UK strategy for L'Oreal For You, which is our global employability program. And that's exciting for me because I get to be entrepreneurial whilst also changing the landscape for the business and the wider community too. What I always say about my career is it's definitely felt episodic. And I like to remind people that when they're starting their careers, it is a marathon rather than a sprint. So gone are the days where you take on one role and then that's your forever role. And that's great because as we grow, our passions, our priorities evolve. And our careers evolve as well. And I think if you get into the right organization, you can have that evolution within the parameters of the same business. So L'Oreal, for example, have people that have worked in different teams, so different countries and different disciplines as well. So HR, data, supply chain, tech, legal, finance, engineering, marketing, you name it. We have people that work in those areas. And I don't need to stay within talent acquisition within the business. My progression won't just be linear. So even at this stage in my 20-year career, I'm still learning. I like the fact that I can evolve and change direction and develop new skills and still feel like I'm working one of the most exciting spaces in the world. But that's where I am. Over the years, I've helped hundreds of graduates and young people take their first steps into their careers. And I've seen a lot of evolution in recruitment practices. I've also become fascinated with human behavior and how companies hire. So I'm a real geek about learning about people and how they do what they do. When it comes to hiring, thankfully, I feel like L'Oreal are getting it right in the space. So I'm delighted to be part of that. We have, for example, a blind interview selection process. We train our hiring managers on inclusive hiring. And we have really, really proactive employee resource groups to support all demographics. So ethnicity, multiculturalism, neurodiversity, LGBTQIA+, working parents. And so I get in my career to be proactive in the areas where I feel I can make a difference. So I'm still excited, 20 years on, learning lots, still passionate. I said it would be a long answer, but that's a bit about me and what I do.
Well, that's a great answer, Abby. Thank you. I mean, we could sit and talk all day about your experiences and kind of your career journey. But the episode today is specifically focused around building relationships and connections. So I want to start talking a little bit about networking, which is often something that those particularly early on in their career can find particularly daunting. So what advice would you give to someone who hasn't actively networked before?
Yeah, I mean, In-person networking can really, really be terrifying. I get that. What I would say is that you have to feel the fear and do it anyway. So when we face situations that are unfamiliar, we tend to automatically have this anxious feeling. So the butterflies, the sweating, the shaky hands. I used to get it all in my auditions. And all of this is actually just a primitive stress response kicking in because our body's getting ready to release this burst of energy to actually help us. It's quite a simplistic description of what happens, but that feeling can really hold you back and prevent you from stumbling across opportunities like that happen within networking that can actually be life-changing. And the only way to get over that feeling is to make it familiar, so your body reacts in a more relaxed fashion every time you come across that situation. And you make it familiar by showing up again and again and again until it feels more familiar. And I think if you're feeling very nervous, go with someone you trust. Yeah, but please do just go. Even if you turn up to a networking event and say nothing to anyone at all, maybe you might say, oh, pass me the coffee. Yeah, at least you found space in a room. And then next time you go, maybe you can set yourself a goal to introduce yourself to one people, and after that, three people, and so on. So that's what I would say. But I get it. It does feel a little bit nerve-wracking.
And it definitely is a prime example of kind of pushing through your comfort zone, isn't it? Which is one of the things we've covered on one of the other episodes. So if one of our listeners decides to attend a networking event and they've gone on their own, what top tips would you give? They've walked into a room, they don't know anybody. How should they approach that situation?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, I've got a few top tips in this area. The first thing I would say is get there early. Yeah. It's harder to enter a conversation that's already in full flow. People have already got their little kind of their little groups that they're talking in. If the room is fairly empty when you arrive, people are more likely to approach you, and then that can make it easier to engage in conversation. The second thing I would say is be friendly. Everyone in the room is in the same position and to network, and everyone feels those butterflies that I talked about earlier. Don't be afraid to share a little bit about yourself and be friendly, and a smile can work wonders. I would also say, and this is going to be very uncomfortable for some people listening to this, but stay off your phone. Yeah, your phone, I know, can be a comfort blanket in these situations, but it actually turns into a distraction. You'll find yourself looking down and not looking for opportunities to catch somebody's eye. So put it away unless you're taking someone's contact details, and be present in the moment. And talking of being present in the moment, I would say be curious. People love talking about themselves. You know, look what happened when you told me to introduce myself today. Yeah. So ask open-ended questions and then actively listen and engage in the conversation. You know, you can use short sentences like, "Oh, tell me a little bit more," or "Why is that?" to try and engage and learn more about people. And just because it's a business event, you don't need to be formal. Everyone is human. Yes, they want to talk about work, but often when I've met business professionals socially, they are just keen to have a conversation about their interests outside of work. So don't be afraid to use interests away from the working world as topics of conversation. And then finally, a crucial point that people often forget, ask to keep in touch with anyone that's of interest. Get their contact details and then don't forget to follow up with them.
Obviously, we are in a post-COVID world and a lot of events are now held online. Mm. Is there much difference in terms of, well, you know, aside from the fact that there's a screen in front of you, how would you approach that in a slightly different way?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think pre-pandemic, there weren't so many online events. And I think it is very different attending one of these online, because you actually have a huge opportunity when you're at home to present your very best self, because you're in a much more powerful position. It's familiar. You know, you're comfortable. There's no stressful commute. and so much more of the experience is on your own term. Despite this, I would really recommend making sure you're fully prepared, because it can be so easy to rest on your laurels when you're at home. So test your technology beforehand. Make sure you are in a quiet space with excellent Wi-Fi, and consider your surroundings, and make sure your background doesn't do the talking for you. Yeah, so a messy room can be a huge distraction. And rightly or wrongly, that can throw up some preconceptions that probably don't exist, but your background is distracting. If you're doing group sessions, don't be afraid to speak up. You can also have prompts. If you have pre-written post-it notes stuck on your screen, that works wonders. People can't see them, but you've got this lovely notice board in front of you. If you don't feel comfortable speaking, you can use the chat feature to engage. And don't be afraid to reach out to people for one-to-one conversations and, again, follow up with them. So slightly different experience. Your aims are the same, though, to find connections and keep them.
So we hear the term elevator pitch quite a lot. And I think our listeners, many of whom will be early on in their careers, will have heard this as part of their education and, you know, some of the journeys that they're on. Can you explain, Abby, what this is and how important it is to have an elevator pitch pre-prepared?
Yes. Yeah. There are a couple of stories, I think, of the origin of elevator pitches. The one that I like the most, the one that is probably the most common, is that the concept came from Hollywood. Yeah, so young scriptwriters and actors would try and catch producers and directors on site, on set. They would corner them in the lift, and they would use that 30 seconds between floors, where their target has got nowhere to go, nothing to do, to pitch them an idea. Yeah. So elevator pitches are 30 second introductions that say who you are and what you do, or as I like to say, who you are and who you help. Yeah, so for young people entering the working world, it's so important to have an elevator pitch because it will form the foundation of that classic interview question. So tell me about yourself. Yeah, your elevator pitch can look like whatever you want it to. It can include your personal values, your education, your employment, your goals, extracurricular activities. But the key thing is to remember that it is there just to entice and to make the person you're speaking to want to hear a little bit more from you. So it's just a snapshot.
I think we've just used your drama degree.
I have, okay. Yes. I knew it would be useful. My mum, I can tell her I was right.
Okay, so let's talk about networks. Obviously, you know, at different stages of your life, your network will grow and grow and grow as you kind of connect with more individuals. But how important is your network and how can you use it? And we'll put it in the context of early in careers and kind of looking for employment.
Yeah, your social network is really important for gaining market intelligence. And when I say that, understanding what businesses do what, and for you as a new person to the working world, gaining more knowledge about which organizations potentially could be good for you in the future. And your network is also important for upskilling yourself. And the great thing is it's not static or finite. You can always grow it. Now, with the rise of social media, it's easier to do this than when it was, you know, in the past. And gone are the days where you rely on just who you know or who your family knows to get a role. And this is actually a good thing because it means that more diverse candidates have a shot at getting into spaces in the commercial world where historically they haven't been, yeah, because they haven't had those connections. So through using social media, you connect with people and build a relationship. And your social network can be split into different categories. So I always like to go, okay, people that are older than me, yeah, who can I learn from? People that are the same age as me, yeah, who can I bond with? And people that are younger than me, so who can I mentor and guide and inspire? And this all lends itself well to advancing your communication skills, as well as using your social network to create opportunities for yourself. Yeah, so you can use your network, of course, to ask for favors, but the most successful people use their networks to see how they can help others in some way. And that in turn creates more opportunities for themselves.
So LinkedIn is obviously the place to be when it comes to professional networking, but it can be quite scary in terms of, you know, posting, knowing what post, what content to post, what's professional, what's suitable. How important would you say, Abby, that LinkedIn is for networking, and any tips on how to use it?
Yeah, I could do a whole training session on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is so important. In fact, I do. LinkedIn is so important. Because whether you like it or not, your online brand will speak for you. If you have a LinkedIn page, that says something. And if you don't, that also says something. So rather than let this online brand happen accidentally, I always recommend that graduates and young people spend time proactively curating it. And this can be really powerful when you start interviewing and employers may look at your profile to learn about you. there are lots and lots of free resources online that can give you access with a quick Google search. And that can give you ideas for content that will be suitable for LinkedIn. But, you know, if in doubt, I always remember that success leaves clues. So find people that you admire and look at what they're posting. Now, you can comment, you can reshare, you can copy and like. You don't always need to create an original media. So there are lots and lots of ways to engage on the platform. I would play around with the search bar at the top of the platform to find people and companies that could be interested in that you could be interested in, and send out connection requests. Now, not everyone you connect to will accept you, and that is absolutely okay. And it's not just okay, it's totally normal. So you should expect this, but don't worry and keep sending out connection requests. You can even put in a personalized note to create a bond with that person. So, for example, hi, I hope you don't mind me reaching out to you. We've got a couple of people in common, and this will always be the case in LinkedIn, but we've got a couple of people in common. I hope you don't mind me reaching out. I'm keen to get more connections in whatever industry they're in. Yeah, more often than not, people will not mind connecting with you. But the key thing I think with LinkedIn is you have to remember that there is nothing to be afraid of. When you look at YouTube, TikTok, Twitch, Instagram, all of these platforms, there was never an instruction manual. Yeah. There was never a how to use page. You just look at how other people are using it, follow trends, test and learn, and start using it. And LinkedIn is just social media. Yeah. So it's just a case of allowing it to become familiar. Yeah. Now it's social media where you are granted encouraged to talk about your career, your education, your job seeking experiences. And like all forms of social media, it evolves. So it first came to the UK in 2003, but it wasn't really understood or widely used until about 2007 was actually when it became profitable. And back then it was very formal. Conversation was strictly business. Now the landscape for business is very different. It's got more of a human element to it post the recession and certainly post-COVID. And so has LinkedIn. So there is now a wider range of topics that are seen as appropriate for the platform. And it's acceptable to post content that isn't strictly business related. Yeah. Although I would always say, if you have real concerns about how appropriate something is to post, I wouldn't upload it simply for your own peace of mind. You don't want to post something and then be worrying and feeling anxious of what's going to happen. Yeah. But LinkedIn has got so many uses. It's not just about posting. You can join groups, you can apply for roles, you can upskill yourself, and you can keep yourself updated with different industries. And the more time you spend on it, the easier it is to use. So the average young person nowadays spends 4 hours on social media. Yeah. So can you make 30 minutes of that assigned to LinkedIn? 30 minutes a day on LinkedIn would make a huge difference. So that's what I would say. Play around with it. Don't be afraid. Have a go. There's nothing too much that can go too wrong with LinkedIn.
And the thing also about LinkedIn, it's not actually about the number of connections that you have. I know a lot of people worry about, oh, I haven't got as many connections as somebody else, but actually it's the value of those connections, isn't it? So how can you make an impact on your network? What kind of things can you post? What is it that people want to know about?
Yeah, no, that's a really, really good point. It's not about the number of people you post. That you know. And actually, if you get your content right, the number of people you know on there and the number of connections you have will grow. Consistency is key. That will absolutely trump everything. It's how marketing works. You post regular content for your network, for your connections on LinkedIn, and that will lead to A, an impact, and B, a bigger network. So naturally, the larger numbers will grow. So I did this on TikTok, yeah. When I started posting, on TikTok about employability. So pick a niche, pick what you decide want to be known for, pick a topic, and stick to that, because your audience will sit within a specific community of interests. Yeah. So I posted regularly and I had over 10,000 followers within a 6 month period. So this is how marketing works. Repeat your brand, repeat your image, repeat your message until it becomes familiar with your target audience. And I would definitely apply that same strategy to using LinkedIn. Your profile on LinkedIn will become synonymous then with the topics you discuss. And then you'll be seen as a trusted voice, someone who's particularly passionate about whatever industry you're in. And if a graduate is doing that online in my industry, I would definitely feel more confident about hiring them. So you can post anything you like, but I think consistency is the most important thing.
So I'm mindful, Abby, that we're joined to the end of our time together. So I've just got a final question for you. I think it's really important to remember that it's not always about what our connections can do for us. It's also about kind of what we can do for them, and kind of it's a two-way relationship. Mm. Can you give us an example of a key relationship that you've developed over time via, I guess, LinkedIn, and how that's impacted on you?
Yeah. So this is a student who called Tarsia. She was head of the African and Caribbean Society at UCL. And the relationship came about, I think, through LinkedIn, but through a colleague in the business. But the L'Oreal Early Careers team ended up having a sponsorship agreement with the society. And Tarsia Jade was our main point of contact. So I had an introductory call with her to see how L'Oreal could support the students, firstly, with future employment and with employability. And, you know, sometimes you engage with someone and their energy, their enthusiasm. I was so impressed by her. And I was even more impressed by how she followed up with me. She was extremely structured. Her work ethic was incredible. And I was really, really impressed with the work that she put in to make the partnership a success. Now, she was studying law at the time and really wanted just a couple of weeks work experience. Now, there wasn't anything available at L'Oreal at the time, but that made me look into my network, and I found a contact who works in commercial law at one of the biggest music firms in the world. And they gave her the 2 weeks work experience that she was looking for. And I think for ethnic minority students in particular, something like that could be a huge game changer for them, because as I said earlier, they won't have this existing network of people in corporate companies that they can lean on. It simply doesn't exist. But Tarsia is a natural networker. I know actually that if I recommend her, she'll do a fantastic job, and that recommendation will also affect my personal brand. Yeah, but I think overall, I would say, you know, the relationships that I've had that have impacted me the most are the ones where I feel like I've made a difference to that person. So within L'Oreal, we've got a large number of interns, management trainees, apprentices, and I always want to help them as much as I can, whether it is through structured employability training that I run or through general day-to-day advice. They're at right at the start of their career journeys, and ultimately will be our future leaders of tomorrow. So the relationships where I can make an effect in that space, that's where I personally get the biggest rewards.
Abby, thank you so much for joining us today on the Aspire podcast and for inspiring our listeners and for sharing all of your insights. I'm sure everyone after listening to this episode will be on LinkedIn, probably sending you a connection request.
I hope so. Feel free to reach out to me. I have about 300 connection requests that I need to accept, but I will. So feel free if you do want to reach out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sheffield Hallam University is one of UK's largest and most diverse universities, with a community of around 37,000 students. The university's mission is simple: they transform lives. Sheffield Hallam is an award-winning university, recently receiving gold in the Teaching Excellence Framework for outstanding support for student access and progression. Individuals from all backgrounds are provided with the opportunity to acquire skills, knowledge, and experience to succeed at whatever they choose to do.